you don't have to hop a plane to see the world. This month's Free This Week picks on Xfinity brings you around the globe. Experience life at a European resort in the hit comedic drama Seaside Hotel from Walter Presents. Watch romance blossom abroad in a Scottish love scheme from Hallmark Movies Channel. Celebrate Earth Month with planet-saving docuseries like EcoEye with Duncan Stewart on Magellan TV. And be transported to your happy place with iHeartRadio's Feelin' Good playlist. Just say Free This Week into your Xfinity voice remote.
Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Signing up and playing is so easy. Simply sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you can get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matter more than ever. Place your moneyline, prop, and parlay bets with the king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets. If you don't win your first bet, that's right, up to $1,500. Again, sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park. That's 1-800-GAMBLER.
Do you dream of a healthier life, but education feels out of reach? Trinity School of Natural Health makes holistic education accessible with online programs to fit your busy schedule. Trinity School of Natural Health makes holistic education accessible with online programs to fit your busy schedule. Trinity School's Certified Natural Health Professional Program is the perfect entry point to gain foundational knowledge to empower yourself, your family, and your community to live healthier lives. Turn your passion into a career. Visit trinityschool.org for more info now.
When you buy Kroger brand products, you feel like you're winning. That's because they offer proven quality at lower than low prices. In fact, we guarantee that you and your family will love how Kroger brand products taste, or you get your money back. So next time you're shopping for the family, look for delicious Kroger brand products, because they'll make you all feel like you're winning. Shop now, in-store, or online. Kroger, fresh for everyone.
Podcasting.
Oh, I love it. I love when we talk into microphones and people listen.
Yay. Yep.
Good for them.
It's going to outlive microblogging.
Apparently.
Okay.
Who could have thought?
We've won, guys.
We are the last medium standing.
Yeah. Well, to be fair, I do think the majority of people on this call got this job
because
in
microblogging.
Some small part because of microblogging.
100% because of microblogging.
Yeah, it's true. Look at where our posts have brought us.
That's right.
Here, to this moment on the podcast. Yeah. It could happen here. The podcast where we don't explain what the podcast is.
That's right.
Nope.
Yep. And yeah, the podcast also contains me, Christopher Wong, contains Garrison Davis, it contains James Stout.
And allegedly Robert Evans.
I think he's legitimately actually busy right now.
He is like recording something else or something.
Yeah, he's doing a marathon thing. But if you look at the iHeart page, it's only Robert.
We have a lot of podcasts on. Yeah, anyway.
It's true.
On the Cool Zone Media.
Yeah, on the Cool Zone Media. That's right.
So speaking of podcasts we've done on the Cool Zone Media, we did one that came out, the one before this one. And
what was it about?
It was about how a bunch of socialists want 500,000 more cops. Or specifically several interventions. Yeah. So, okay. I asked myself the question when I read this. Why? Why do they want this? How did we get here?
Because they're rich and they're scared.
This is true. There's also sort of deeper roots to what's happening here. And okay, so like it is true that there's been a whole wave of people who were sort of nominally progressive or like socialist in 2016 or 2017 who turned right in the past few years, particularly over racial issues like Li Feng, Glenn Greenwald, like more recently the TYT people. Like Bashar Sankara's been doing crime wave shit, like kind of recently, which was actually really funny. He had this tweet about how, like, oh, the crime rate's not actually down. There's specific neighborhoods where the crime where people are poor, where the crime is up, and then you look at the data, and that's exactly the opposite of what's happening. But okay, so but this entire push for sort of more police is part of a broader political project that Adan Arusumi and his sort of allies in Jacobin and et cetera have been pushing for years now. And this sort of like political project is the class side of what's called the class versus race, or the race versus class debate. So for people who were either weren't here for this or have like blissfully forgotten this, the race class debate was basically an argument about sort of the role of race in leftist organizing. The argument was basically like, okay, should we understand race as like a structural force in the US that requires its own specific organizing around racial justice and like liberation movements, or should we attempt to put class first and attempt to solve racism by appealing to like the interests of the entire working class and only doing class-based organizing? There are broadly like three types of class first people, and weirdly we're gonna see two of them here. There are a very small number of very committed and very radical Marxists and like a small number of anarchists who think that like, well, race was a product of class anyways, and so if you end the class system and abolish private property, that's the sort of like actual central like mechanism of oppression in society. And if you do that, like, you know, race will sort of fall apart, and so, you know, you care about class. Whatever, sure.
It's all false consciousness anyway.
Yeah, like, these people are wrong. I think they're less dangerous than the other kind of two people, but we're also going to see one of these guys later, so there's the people I call the, like, class with, like, a K people who are just straight up like racists, like, yeah, I mean, they are
class with a KKK is,
yeah, right, like you know, the groups of socialists I've compared them to are like the socialists who came to the US after 1848 and were like, oh shit, who cares, like slavery, like we don't care about slavery, the actual thing that like is good for the working class is stealing more land for indigenous people, and this is how we're going to solve the labor question.
Oh yeah.
Or that'll also the sort of like the people who were in the Knights of Labor in like the 1880s who were like, all right, we need to defend labor. The way we're going to defend labor is by ethnically cleansing the entire West Coast of Chinese people. Like, these are basically these guys, right? They're just straight up racist who want unions and healthcare. They used to be a real faction in the DSA, formed around this like absolutely dog shit subreddit called Stupid Poll. There used to be a bunch of them in Philadelphia, and these kind of people, like, they were like Red Scare's initial base. And so by, you know, this was like the 2017, 2018, 2019. By now, like in 2022, these people are almost entirely deranged tradcaths who spend literally their entire time deep throating Peter Thiel's boot. So they're kind of mostly like they're just right wingers now. Like that's what's happened to these people. Good riddance, fuck them. And then there are people like Adan Arusumi and Bhaskar Sankara who don't really want to end capitalism and think that socialism is just sort of like welfare states and some unions. And this is sort of critical, tend to think that racial justice organizing is a distraction from their main goal of achieving socialism. And by achieving socialism, I mean electoralism. And by electoralism, I mean getting these people elected to office.
Yeah.
I hate these people. Their politics sucks. I've been fighting them for, like, since I became a leftist, I have been at war with these people. And to get a sense of how we got from, you know, but what was legitimately, in a lot of cases, what was at least legitimately an argument about how to deal with racism to a bunch of socialists going, we need 500,000 more cops. I want to take a look at a piece Adam Arusumi wrote in Catalyst with David Zachariah called The Class Path to Racial Liberation. And I want to take a quote from its opening to give it a sense of people of like how awful this politics is. This is like one of their sort of like opening statements about why they're taking the class side in the debate. We argue that the class-race debate should center on one principal domain, the distribution of material resources. Now, okay, at first glance, this seems kind of reasonable enough, but there's another incredibly important aspect of any attempt to grapple with race and class that Usumi is just ignoring entirely, and that's violence, right? Race is not just a measure of economic inequality, it's an index of violence. And, you know, racialization increases your risk of interpersonal violence, it increases your risk of sexual violence, it increases your risk of mass communal violence, a la lynchings or sort of ethnic cleansing campaigns. And maybe most importantly for this whole argument, like, being racialized dramatically increases the risk of suffering state violence. And this is a real problem for the sort of class first people, because you know, Usami's sort of multiracial working class electoral project won't do shit to prevent people from experiencing state violence just because there's welfare programs. You know, we talked about this, what this looks like in our Brazil episodes, right? You actually have, like, legitimately a sort of united multiracial working class that elects a social democratic government, and they enact anti-poverty reforms and increase the size of the welfare state. And while this is happening, they also increase the incarcerated population by 620% and created a rate of police killing that is 11 times higher than it is in the U.S., right? And this is the thing these people really don't want anyone to think about, which is that race is actually more complicated than economic inequality, which this entire politics is just dedicated to not seeing, because class-first politics, like, a lot of what it really is about amounts to a theoretical framework that gives you a way to argue that race is not an explanatory framework for literally anything, so you don't have to talk about it. And anyone who talks about it is dividing the working class or some shit, and it...
Yeah. Class traitor.
Yeah, it fucking sucks. And, you know, like, one of the big sort of political violence things is mass incarceration. And one of sort of O'Donnell's, like, political projects is arguing that mass incarceration isn't about race at all, but it's actually about class. Which... So we're gonna see some more bullshit. He wrote an article in Catalyst called "The Economic Origin of Mass Incarceration" alongside UChicago professor John Clegg. And I have an enormous special contempt for John Clegg for two reasons here. One, because, you know, O'Donnell's like an irredeemable Jacobin, like, soak dem hack, right? Clegg is nominally was part of the sort of the Anglophone Marxist, like, ultra left, right? Like, he was one of the contributors to the sort of to the ultra-left theory journal, like, ultra-left sort of Marxist communization journal Endnotes, which, you know, like, that influenced me a lot when I was, like, a tiny baby leftist. And I also have an incredible amount of contempt here because he's a Harper Schmidt fellow at the University of Chicago. And here's the thing. Okay, I don't know what Harvard is like, right? I've never been there. I don't know what their campus is like. I don't know what it's like to be on campus at Harvard. I know what the UChicago campus is like. I know that there's a cop on every fucking corner. I know that there's surveillance cameras literally everywhere. I know that they lock down the entire fucking campus while hundreds of heavily armed cops storm through every building and every courtyard in the area every single time a kid steals something from a gaming store and runs for it until they've hunted them the fuck down. And I know that, you know, I know that the cops almost fucking killed me while I was there during a police chase. I know that John Clegg was on fucking campus when the UChicago Police Department shot a kid who was having a mental health crisis. And to watch this shit every single fucking day and to make this kind of argument is just fucking unforgivable. It is fucking atrocious. I guess I should explain this a little bit for people who don't understand this. So the University of Chicago is, like, in the middle of the south side of Chicago. It, like, most of the neighborhoods around it are, like, 80% black. And then there is just this fucking university they've planted in the middle of it. And this college has the world's largest private police force. There's also the regular fucking CPDs around there. There are, like, for, like, blocks and like through other neighborhoods, there are just UChicago police officers there. There are fucking CPD cops everywhere. It is a fucking militarized hellhole. And yeah, and, you know, like, it is a place where, like, the way that race functions in the U.S. is blindingly fucking obvious. You can immediately understand it by looking. Like, you walk outside your fucking dorm, you look at the cop, and you look at how the cop treats people depending on what their race is, right? It is so unbelievably obvious. However, in this article, Clegg and Usami are going to argue that mass incarceration is actually a product of class policy resulting from a lack of social democracy and underdevelopment resulting from a transition from an agrarian economy to an industrial economy in the 20th century.
Many people are saying this.
And the subsequent migration of black people north, like...
What kind of agrarian economy, we have to ask?
Yeah.
Who is doing the labor in said agrarian economy? How much were they paid?
It's like the basic argument that they're gonna make is that, like, well, so there were a bunch of people who'd been slaves and then they became not slaves, and then a bunch of them started migrating north, but because there was this mass migration, all these people showed up to these cities where there was no infrastructure, and then so there was a bunch of crime, and then because of the crime there was mass incarceration, which is we're gonna get some more into this. But before we go into the sort of deeply reactionary part of this article, right? You have to understand that when these people say that this is a class-based policy, like, class here does not mean the same thing that it means for, like, you know, a regular person who thinks about class or like, you know, a Marxist, which again, both these people nominally are. Here's from the journal Spectre, which did a really good sort of critique of this whole absolutely dog shit article. Quote, Clegg and Usami's claim that class is essential to understanding mass incarceration amounts to a repackaging of a widely understood fact as revelatory insight. And while they title their article, quote, The Economic Origins of Mass Incarceration, they never delve further into class in a Marxist or even critical sense. Instead, they use educational attainment data as a proxy. They note that a large portion of people who are imprisoned have low levels of educational attainment. And I am glad to know that everyone on this call who does the exact same job as me, we're all from different classes. Congratulations, yeah. James. You are now the bourgeoisie. Congratulations, yeah. Garrison. You are now proletariat. I'm, I guess, the labor aristocracy.
Mm-hmm. That's why I'm here to expropriate the surplus value from your labor, Garrison.
Yep. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. You know, and like, if you go to prison, it's my fault.
Yeah. Like, I just, okay. So, like.
Yeah. What an asshole. What a ridiculous fucking claim.
Yeah. And it's like, these, okay. So, like, Usami's, like, the Jacobin people do this all the time, right? Like, they made this famous study about the people who vote for Trump that was like, oh, it's people who voted for Trump did it in, like, working class areas. And again, working class was by education data. And then also, they didn't go, because it turns out, like, this is actually true, right? There are a lot of people who voted for Trump from working class areas. It turns out who those people are the small business owners in working class areas. But they didn't fucking go grandeur enough so that, you know, they do this shit all the time. Right, and this is the kind of analysis that, like,
yeah, using shit as a proxy for class is like it's a classic fallacious thing.
Yeah, that, what's his name? Nicholas Kristof. He did this too. Also, this is we're getting fucking Kristof level analysis out of these supposed Marxists, and like, okay, so. All right, the curious thing here is that Clegg, at least on an intellectual level, knows better than this, right? Like, he wrote for EndNotes. EndNotes has a very sophisticated class analysis. But if you're actually interested in the sweeping arc of the history of the proletariat, you can't make the kinds of arguments that Clegg is making in this thing. And so, you know, because he's trying to make this argument, he's reduced to this, like just absolute, like seventh-rate, like, fucking New York Times pundit-level analysis.
Yeah.
And it's like, okay, and, you know, and like this is really sad, because for actual Marxists and not sort of like liberal bourgeois hacks doing like fucking New York Times bullshit, you know, class is about ownership, right? It's about who owns the means of production and who's forced to work for them. And, you know, okay, so you have this, you have the proletariat or like the working class, who are the people who own nothing and are thus forced to sell their labor for people who do own stuff, right? But this also presents a problem for this entire argument, because if you actually want to do class analysis, you have to understand that race plays a major role in who even gets to become part of the regular proletariat in the first place. Because there's a lot of people through the development of the course of capitalism who fucking never even got to become wage laborers because they were enslaved, they were exterminated, they were turned into debt peons, and oh wait, guess who fucking got that shit? Oh yeah, it wasn't white people. And you know, if you're gonna be writing arguments like explaining the rise of like a mass system of enslavement, you might want to think about this. But no. Okay, so do you know what else is responsible for a mass system of enslavement?
The advertising and how they affect our brains.
Yeah, that one.
I was gonna go with Stalin, but yours was good.
Well. Same diff, honestly.
Yeah, Stalin, first mass marketer.
So true. Yep.
Famously, yeah. Stalin will send you a meal kit if you ask him.
There's a lot of pros to drinking Health Aid kombucha. No cons that I can think of. Pro, amazing taste. Pro, pairs well with anything. Pro, probiotic. That's a literal pro. And it's deliciously refreshing. It's the perfect pairing to your meal or great on its own, whether you're having Pink Lady Apple, Berry Lemonade, or one of the other great flavors. It's the perfect swap for soda or alcohol. Make it part of your daily routine. Look for the brown bottle with an anchor on it and try Health Aid Kombucha today.
You don't have to hop a plane to see the world. This month's Free This Week picks on Xfinity brings you around the globe. Experience life at a European resort in the hit comedic drama Seaside Hotel from Walter Presents. Watch romance blossom abroad in a Scottish love scheme from Hallmark Movies Channel. Celebrate Earth Month with planet-saving docuseries like EcoEye with Duncan Stewart on Magellan TV. And be transported to your happy place with iHeartRadio's Feelin' Good playlist. Just say Free This Week into your Xfinity voice remote.
Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Signing up and playing is so easy. Simply sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you can get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matter more than ever. Place your moneyline, prop, and parlay bets with the king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. That's right, up to $1,500. Again, sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park. That's 1-800-GAMBLER.
Like many of us, you might think identity theft will never happen to you. But consider this. There's a new identity theft victim every 3 seconds in the U.S. That's over 15 million people by the end of this year, equal to the populations of New York, Los Angeles, and Chicago combined. Even worse, identity theft victims often don't even know they're victims. That's why LifeLock Identity Theft Protection alerts you to identity threats, even the ones that don't show up on a credit report, like data breaches, fraudulent bank transactions, loan and credit card applications, and crimes committed in your name. If your identity is stolen, your own dedicated LifeLock U.S.-based restoration specialist will work to fix it. LifeLock protects you in ways that you simply can't on your own. Join now and save up to 25% your first year at LifeLock.com/news. That's LifeLock.com/news to save up to 25%. Identity theft protection starts here.
Okay, we're back, and we're back to talk about the other argument of the economic origin of mass incarceration, which is that the argument that mass incarceration happened because people were legitimately scared about crime. Like, oh, seriously, no. This is their argument. Their argument is that crime went up, people demanded less crime, and then the government did it. Like, I...
Wait, did they give analysis of the class of people? They
make this fun argument that both black and white people were demanding the end of crime, which is sort of true, but you know, if you look at what obviously this is the thing, right? Like, you can find people of any race who will take basically any political position. And so if you go looking for like black people who are tough on crime, you can find it, right? There are black politicians who were tough on crime, right? But that's also not the reason why mass incarceration happened. I'm sorry. And also, like, you know, there were people who like weren't tough on crime, people who were like talking about trying to end like sort of like violence spikes. But if you look at what they were saying, it was stuff like we want the police to like respect human rights instead of property rights. And this is just sort of silly, right? But the point of this is that this is their full on broadside against abolitionism as like a body of work, right? It's sort of modern abolitionism. It's directly criticizing Michelle Alexander's The New Jim Crow, Mass Incarceration in the Age of Colorblindness.
Yeah.
And it's also like a volley basically against anyone who's trying to explain mass incarceration through race. And so what they argue is that crime increased because there wasn't a strong labor movement to solve the problem that like caused solve the problems that caused crime with economic like redistribution. So the state turned to like a cheaper option, which was prisons. And
is it a cheaper option?
Well, okay, so they're not wrong there is some truth here, right? Which is that there is a reason that mass incarceration started spiking when capitalism went into crisis in the 70s and 80s. And it is actually genuinely cheaper for the bourgeoisie to run a prison state than it is to run a welfare state. But and this is the important part, right? Both the welfare state and the prison complex are just different forms of counterinsurgency. Usabi, who is a social democrat, is ideologically incapable of understanding this. His entire ideology is that, like, is based on the fact that the welfare state is the endpoint of socialism. But this is completely backwards, right? The welfare state and social democracy were first implemented by Bismarck, like specifically as a way to buy workers off to stop them from carrying out a socialist revolution and actually seizing the property of the ruling class and using the production for the benefit of mankind and not profit. That is why the welfare state was invented. That was the first time I was put into practice.
If you go back to Edmund Burke, right, in the French Revolution, reform to preserve, the idea that we have to give people these little slices here and there, give them a treat. And then they will never come and take the cake.
And if you read these people, they're really explicit about this. Like, they will just openly say we're buying off the working class. But these absolute clowns have somehow convinced themselves that this is what socialism actually is.
Yep, it's when treats. Socialism is when treats.
Socialism is when you confuse table scraps for treats.
And this
comes to sort of the other thing that these people can't understand, which is that social democracy was a class compromise, right? There was a deal that the capitalists and the working class agreed to. And when I say they agreed to this, right, this isn't just sort of it kind of is an abstract deal, but there were also very literal deals, right? There's this thing called the Treaty of Detroit, which is this massive, basically, set of negotiations and then agreements that are made between the U.S. government, a huge portion of organized labor, the auto industry, and the auto companies, right? Which the substance of the Treaty of Detroit was if you give us all of this welfare shit and benefits shit, right, we will stop constantly going on strike. These are explicit deals. They're explicitly being negotiated between these massive trade unions and the capitalists who own companies by the American government. And so they get this deal. The deal is you get unions and pension and a vacation and healthcare as long as you don't seize control of factories and run them for themselves.
Yeah.
And this held from sort of the 50s through the 70s. Partially this held because also the US specifically was just really, really rich and its economy was growing really fast. But, by the 1970s, suddenly the rate of profit is starting to collapse. And suddenly it does actually become possible to both pay for the welfare state and have capital turn into more capital at the same time. And, what happens is full-on class war over the course of the 70s and the 80s, and the capitalists win the class war. And the product of this, and this is true not just in the U.S., but in a lot of other neoliberal countries too, is that there is a massive military, the state is sort of stripped down to nothing in terms of providing services. But there's this massive buildup of the military and police and also prisons. And so, this is in some sense, if you want a class-based explanation of mass incarceration, this is part of that's a big part of what's going on. It's also true that in the U.S., insofar as there was sort of a revolutionary force, it was black people doing doing the Panthers, doing the Black Liberation Army. And this meant that sort of the sort of counter-revolution to this was specifically about deploying the sort of they're deploying the state against these people because
this
movement is actively trying to destroy capitalism by destroying the racist police apparatus and
indigenous this is a, folks too, I guess, same time period, AIM, for instance.
Yeah. And so the ruling class sort of loses their minds, and this is also part of what's happening here. But the problem is the sort of Jacobin cop freaks need the police for their social democratic hell world that they want to build. And so they can't have any it is incredibly structurally dangerous for them for people to be arguing that the police are inherently a force of systemic racial oppression because they want them around. And so they do all this.
So they
bullshit,
can keep playing
right?
$50 per article.
Yeah. And Clegg, meanwhile, as best I can tell, just doesn't want to use race as an explanation for shit. They literally argue in this article that white flight was actually just capital flight and wasn't about racism.
Good.
And they're doing this entire thing about the sort of political economy of the city and they never mention, they're so ruthlessly committed to their program of not talking about racism, they don't even mention redlining. It's like, like they've managed to go to the right of like the Libertarian Party on race. It's like,
yeah, you gotta outflank him to the right.
So I'm gonna read more from the Spectre article that's like yelling at these people. Considering their investments in the category of violent crime, Clegg and Usaby seem curiously serene about the practices that upheld segregation. They would have us believe that such tactics are simply, quote, caste-based remedies of exclusion, and that, quote, such strategies were rational, even if suboptimal in the long run, effectively rationalizing and apologizing for racism. So, yeah. This is great. And then they cap this off with this giant, like, swelling crescendo of an argument about how the left can't ignore crime. And, this is an argument with political consequences, right? And you can see those consequences in the 500,000 cops article we were talking about yesterday. Here's a quote from that article. This figure shows the same prisoner and police data as shown in figure one, but this time denominated by the level of homicide rather than the population. America's outlying incarceration rate looks normal, given the level of serious crime. And now, the level of policing in the United States appears exceptionally low compared to other countries. So, okay, you can see the line of argument here, right? It goes, like, mass incarceration isn't about race, it's actually about class, and actually it's really about crime. And then it goes from the crime to, this was about crime, to we need to actually do something about crime. And then that turns into the only thing we can do about crime is have more cops. Yeah. And the other part of this, right, it goes back to the thing about, like, okay, the thing about, like, the, you know, and this is something that Garrison was talking about yesterday, right? Like, the way in which you can only think the level of policing in the U.S. is exceptionally low is if you've never interacted with a cop. And
yes,
this is a deliberate thing, right? The sort of Jacobin cadre of, like, faux Marxists, like, their entire political project was, originally was driving off the anarchists who'd founded Occupy, you know, and driving these people into the political wilderness to displace it with their sort of bureaucratic cop socialism, right? Like, one of the first, like, big Jacobin articles was a giant thing about why the Zapatistas aren't a model for the American left, because, right? Like, you can see what's happening here. Okay. These people have been anti-anarchist, like, to their core, because they need cops, they need to get rid of the people who hate the cops. Like, again, the people who were actually on the streets during Occupy, who have seen shit like, for example, the bloody stains on the wall outside of police holding pens where the cops smashed the heads into of, like, every single person they arrested, a thing that happened constantly during Occupy, right? And these people who, you know, have seen the police shoot their friends' eyes out, like, are incredibly inconvenient if you're trying to put yourself on top of a police state. And, you know, so, of course, are abolitionists, which means you also need to sideline them. And these are, this, you know, this sort of strategy is an old entrenched, like, position of these people. In 2018, Jeremy Gong, who was, like, the one time, basically, like, the dictator of DSA East Bay, was caught in secret documents saying, quote, we are not, in his capital letters, not for abolition of prisons. I would go further. 90% of black people want more police in their neighborhoods.
Really? All right.
Yeah. Jeremy Gong, by the way, Asian dude, not black. Fuck you. Eat shit. I hope you're having fun. I don't hope you're having fun. I hope you're having a bad time losing another election by getting 3% of the vote or some shit. Like, fuck you. Eat shit. Yeah. And I should mention this also. Like, it's a very obvious thing to say, but it should be pointed out that, like, everyone who's making this argument, like, specifically these arguments about cops and about the stuff being about crime, these people are all either white or Asian. And I genuinely think that plays a pretty big role in why they're doing this.
It is just a breathtaking position to take in 2021 as a white person. Like, I'm looking at the Anna Kasparian article, which she wrote for Newsweek, source of unbiased content on the left, about how we need to stop gaslighting. Progressives need to stop gaslighting people on crime. As a white person in 2022, like, take the stand with the platform that has been given to you with all the privileges that you have had and gaslight black folks about the importance of race is just, like, breathtakingly lacking in, like, context of self-awareness, or like, have you not been fucking paying attention? Like, at least for the last 2 years, if not for the last 20 years, you know?
Yeah, and I mean, like, this is the whole thing, right? Like, they have this whole sort of political project that's, like makes talking up, like, their goal is to make talking about this shit sound cringe. Because, yeah. You know, they have to, right? And this is also sort of class-based survival strategy, right? Because, like, these people couldn't fucking hack it as abolitionist scholars. They have no fucking idea what they're talking about, right? Yeah. If they have to actually intellectually, like, be in the same sphere as, like, someone like Ruth Gilmore Wilson, they are going to get fucking blown. Like, these people are, like, this is like a fucking battle cruiser going to war against a speedboat, right? Like, they can't fucking hack it. And so they have to sort of, like, do all of this shit to convince people that, like, no, it's actually really not about race. It's actually about class, this thing that I can very easily pretend to care about from academia in a way that I can't with, you know, pretending to care about race, because, like, I can't even fucking fake it, right? And you know, I would say this, like, back in 2018, right, like, Jeremy Gong and his allies are very careful to frame their view in terms of, like, well, we want to end mass incarceration and police violence, but we have to be tactical about how we do it, and the tactical about how we do it is black people want more cops, right? But that was their internal documents. Their external statements were like, well, some police abolitionism stuff looks like more cops anyways. But you know, internally they were always saying this. And now with the, you know, these people think that there's a political right turn coming, and they think that, you know, they can fucking take their mask off and just say what they really mean, which is 500,000 more fucking cops. And, you know, and part of what's going on here, right, is like the reason this is happening is because when the uprising happened, these people were just caught with their pants down, because their entire political project for, like, fucking how many years were they doing this? Like, 7 years was elect Bernie Sanders. And then he lost back to back successively to, like, Hillary Clinton, who was maybe the least popular candidate the Democrats have ever run ever. And Joe Biden, who is a fucking senile rapist, who, like, again, was all, like, they lost this election to a man who couldn't remember who he had been vice president under, and they couldn't beat him, right? Like, yeah. So these people were completely discredited. And then, you know, the uprising happened, these people were caught with their pants down, because they'd spent their entire fucking time, arguing that, like, there's no path to liberation through race, any kind of racial, like, politics at all, intersectionality's bullshit, like, we just have to focus on class, And their fucking pure class electoral campaign failed in... Oh, hey, guess what? It failed in the South. Like, wow, damn. I wonder why this politics fucking got swept by Joe Biden. Like, okay. And then, you know, and then the uprising starts. And the uprising is, you know, the uprising is about anti-racism. It is about people looking at the violence, like, of the police against black people and going, fuck this. And they have nothing, right? Like, the whole intellectual leadership here, like, all these people are fucking calling for more cops. Bernie Sanders is arguing for more cops, right? Like, Chapo was literally making the same arguments that my fucking mayor made while she was raising the fucking drawbridges to stop protesters from being able to get back into the middle of Chicago, which is that actually, like, cops, becoming a cop is actually one of the few ways that non-white people can join the middle class. Right. That was, I think Amber made that argument, right? So, you know, they have nothing, right? And you know, okay, and you know, and the uprising eventually gets suppressed, which is the best thing that ever happened to these people, because if the uprising had succeeded, these people were done, right? Like, but all of this has enormous consequences, right? Which is the failure of the working class to appear at the ballot box to, like, pull Bernie Sanders over the line against Joe Biden revealed something that was, like, patently obvious to anyone who'd been watching how the working class is moving worldwide for the past 20 years. Which is that the only thing that can actually unify if you care about class politics, the only thing that can unify the working class and pull it together as a coherent political force to do a thing is their hatred of the police. If you look at what the working class politics in the 21st century, the working class finds its historical unity exactly and only on the barricade. It appears undivided literally nowhere else. It is impossible. You can't do it. The only thing that does it is fighting the police.
Like, more broadly, in, like, means of state violence, right? Like, if we look at the Popular Front in Spain, you even get, like, cops who are installed by a socialist Republican government joining the working class to fight the military. But, yeah, instead, we're going to be like, the working class will be united in this op-ed at Newsweek.com.
Yeah, or in this fucking electoral thing, right? And it's like, no, and I think that, like... This is partially about these people not understanding the sort of broad arc of the last decade and a half, which is that, like... This was the actual meaning behind the people want the fall of the regime, right? This was what was going on in the last decade of uprisings and street movements across the world, right? Is that was the thing that could unify the working class. But of course, and this is the sort of secret of all of this, right? Like, these people don't want to unify the working class. They only want to unify it if it's under their control. The eruption of, you know, like, actually the working class standing side by side together fighting the cops on barricades in 2020 was the worst thing that could possibly happen to them, because it you know, it pointed to another way of doing politics that they like in the street that they thought they'd, you know, crushed after the defeat of Occupy. And and you know, and they were incredibly scared by this. They were pissed off by this. And you know, I mentioned last episode that I was going to talk about the sort of class politics that's at work here, because, you know, these demands for more cops, like, they don't come from the working class, right? Like, insofar as there's ever been a referendum on the police as an institution, it was 2020. And, you know, we know what that looked like, right? It was a bunch of fucking working class kids went into the streets and, you know, and fought like lions against the fucking cops. And even the sort of liberal, like the liberal middle and professional classes, like, eventually turned against them, you know, as sort of 2020 rolled on, right? And, you know, those people still hung on for months and months and months, you know, refusing to leave the streets, even after the fucking federal marshal started literally assassinating people openly in the streets, right? Like, the whole demand for more cops, for like a harsher crackdown on crime, all of this stuff comes from precisely the opposite direction, right? It's entirely generated by basically the media class, right? It's class base is a combination of these sort of like faux progressive like media outlets, and originally this starts with the New York Times and the Washington Post, and then moves left or nominally left, right? And it, when it hits like the fucking TYT and all of their like bullshit, right? And then, you know, and then at that point, having run through the media people, right? It starts running through these pseudo radical academics like Christopher Lewis and Adan Naruhisami, and then. The last group of people who are backing this is a very weird one, but there's a collection of paid union staffers who, like, for their jobs, because they're in the big unions, work on police and prison guard contracts. This has been a huge problem with the DSA in what was it, 2016? No, 2015, 2016. One of the NPC elections they had for the National Political Committee, which is like the DSA's big major body. Like governing body, right? People accidentally elected a police union organizer because he was like, they knew he was a union organizer, but they didn't know that he organized police unions. And then he fucking refused, like nothing was going to happen. And then basically what happened is everyone on the left of the organization bullied him out. And so he resigned. But like, yeah, there's a lot of those people, right? And those people's class incentives are incredibly obvious, right? But yeah.
And didn't the AFL-CIO, even in 2020, like, refuse to reject police unions, right? Yeah. They were like, no.
I think someone threw a Molotov, like, into the headquarters of the AFL-CIO because of it. Like, yeah, like, this was a whole fucking thing. And, you know, like, this sucks. Cops are not fucking workers. Jesus Christ. Like... They're just not. If you look at what they actually do, they're basically minor feudal lords in that they extract rent from everyone by fucking walking on people and robbing them, and then they also extract rent directly from us by stealing just like enormous, increasingly large amounts of city funds under basically the threat of extortion and violence.
Yeah, little daimyos.
Yeah, it's shit.
There's a lot of pros to drinking Health Aid kombucha. No cons that I can think of. Pro, amazing taste. Pro, pairs well with anything. Pro, probiotic. That's a literal pro. And it's deliciously refreshing. It's the perfect pairing to your meal or great on its own, whether you're having Pink Lady Apple, Berry Lemonade, or one of the other great flavors. It's the perfect swap for soda or alcohol. Make it part of your daily routine. Look for the brown bottle with an anchor on it and try Health Aid Kombucha today.
You don't have to hop a plane to see the world. This month's Free This Week picks on Xfinity brings you around the globe. Experience life at a European resort in the hit comedic drama Seaside Hotel from Walter Presents. Watch romance blossom abroad in a Scottish love scheme from Hallmark Movies Channel. Celebrate Earth Month with planet-saving docuseries like EcoEye with Duncan Stewart on Magellan TV. And be transported to your happy place with iHeartRadio's Feeling Good playlist. Just say Free This Week into your Xfinity voice remote.
Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Signing up and playing is so easy. Simply sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you can get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matter more than ever. Place your moneyline, prop, and parlay bets with the king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets. If you don't win your first bet, that's right, up to $1,500. Again, sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park. That's 1-800-GAMBLER.
Do you dream of a healthier life, but education feels out of reach? Trinity School of Natural Health makes holistic education accessible with online programs to fit your busy schedule. Trinity School of Natural Health makes holistic education accessible with online programs to fit your busy schedule. Trinity School's Certified Natural Health Professional Program is the perfect entry point to gain foundational knowledge to empower yourself, your family, and your community to live healthier lives. Turn your passion into a career. Visit trinityschool.org for more info now.
I want to come back to sort of left media outlets, right? Because what we've been seeing here is that as these sort of left media outlets get larger, right, they increasingly adopt like insane small business tyrant politics, because that's who they're becoming, right? TYT notoriously tried to bust its own union staff.
Yeah.
Because it turns out as journalists become bosses and capitalists, they have their own class interests to look out for, right?
Yeah. And they will continue producing this class discourse, which serves as nothing other than like best like a safety sort of steam valve, right, for people who are frustrated by the class situation they work in, if not like an outright sort of disinformation campaign about what class is.
Yeah. And you know, and there's I think there's another thing going on here too, which is that like, okay, if you're like a sort of like media outlet and your thing is that you hate liberals and that you're on the left, right, there's kind of a cap to your audience base. And specifically, there's a cap to the kind of audience you can have that actually has money. Because, you know, you can get a broke base of sort of progressive workers, and you can get some college students, right? But at some point, like, those are not people that have a large amount of money.
Yeah.
And at some point, the right offers a listener base that has a bunch of money. And this gives you a revenue base for sort of would-be, like, media tycoons hitting the limits of their original base. And this is responsible for things like Max Blumenthal and ex, like, TYT reporter Jimmy Dore, like, descending into just full-on COVID denialism and conspiracy. I mean, you know, it's not like these people were, like, doing good before, but, like, you know, full-on right-wing, like Max Blumenthal going from being, like, the most pro-CCP guy the world has ever seen to literally writing articles about how social credit is coming to the U.S., in a form of COVID restrictions, like this kind of shit. And you know, so like that's part of the class politics going on here. Like there's another thing, which is like, okay, there's the Harvard academics. I don't think we need to say anything complicated about their class loyalties, except that like none of these dipshits will ever be beaten half to death by a cop. Yeah, I mean, we talked about the union bureaucrats, right? They're slightly more complicated, but again, like, in class terms, you get people who are either driven by purely by sort of the revenue that cop unions bring in. And then you get people who are opposed to political organizations like the DSA taking firm stances against police union organizers because it would affect their own ability to win elections inside the DSA, a thing that has happened so many times.
It's great. It is very funny that they chose class as they chose like education level as their proxy for class. And we are discussing this in the same week that we release an episode about a grad student strike at the largest university in the country, because grad students are unhoused because they can't afford to pay their rent and feed themselves.
Yep. It is atrocious shit. Like, I just...
Yeah.
Okay.
I
hate these people. So I want to close off by talking about something, which is that there's also a political angle to all of this, right? These people, all of these people doing this fucking tough on crime bullshit, all these people fucking going right, all of these people calculated that a right turn in American politics was coming, right? That's why TYT endorsed a fucking, literally a Republican in California who was also an insane tough on crime guy. This is why Rick Caruso, yeah, who was a Republican who changed his party affiliation so we could run the Democratic thing, who fucking sucks ass. That's why they endorsed that guy. That's why they had Matt, quote, alleged pedophile Gates on their show on fucking election night.
Right? They had Larry Elder on their show as well, like election denialist Larry Elder.
Yeah, like this wasn't just a pure product of these people going insane, watching videos of like people looting grocery stores and turning into like tough on crime reactionaries. This was a political calculation. And what,
big stuff,
but but they fucked up, right? These people fundamentally don't understand what this country is. They're scared. They've given up. They saw a single homeless person on the street and turned into a fascist, and they think that the American people are just hopelessly reactionary, and the only thing that's left to do is salvage the situation by selling out. And they're fucking
smart. They don't think, they don't credit people with having like compassion or empathy or intelligence either, right? They think they will just go the direction their stupid grift show points.
Yeah, and they're wrong. They're incredibly wrong. This is a country that, in the name of fighting racism and the police, in the name of solidarity with people who are not their fucking selves, people who they will literally never meet, put on a mask, picked up a brick, and waged war against the best-funded police force in human history. And for like a week and a half, those same fucking Americans, who the entire political spectrum had written off as hopelessly beaten down and passive and right-wing and like people who will take any amount of abuse and never say anything back, wrecked the cop shit so hard they lost control over the centers of multiple major American cities and had to call in the fucking National Guard, who in turn got their shit wrecked so hard that they had to rely on liberal civil society to calm the protest down. And even then, the president would have fucking deployed the army against them if he'd actually been physically able to. And the only reason that these people weren't fighting the fucking army in the streets was that the fucking American generals refused to go along with it, right? Like, that is who the U.S. is. That is who this generation is. This generation is forever the generation that burned a third precinct. And the fucking ex-left is running right. Just don't fucking get it. Right, they think the entire clock has been wound back. They think that like those that like the people who did that have already been destroyed. They don't matter. The only thing left, you know, that you can do is join the right and mitigate the damage. And they're fucking wrong. They are wrong. They can't see it. They cannot see that there is no way to turn the clock back to before the uprising happened. They can't see that like this entire country, that the American working class, that parts of the people who are not part of the American working class have been fundamentally changed. And yeah, they just can't see it. And because they can't see it, the only thing that they're ever going to feel is the weight of their is the only thing they can feel is the weight of their ignorance. And the only thing they're going to feel on top of that is them getting fucking buried by the weight of a history that has left them behind. Because fuck these people. Fuck the cops. Fuck the people who support the cops. These people will be down but will be fucking drowned by the tide of history they thought didn't fucking exist. Fuck them. Okay, this is what, you could probably tell I wrote this really, really pissed off at 5 in the fucking morning because Jesus Christ.
That was good.
Yeah.
Yeah, I agree with you. Pick up a brick, put down the Young Turks.
Yeah. don't fucking support more cops. Everyone will hate you. Your coworkers will hate you. Your friends will hate you. Your family will hate you. The guy at the fucking corner store will hate you.
Yeah, if you find your fucking left hero standing the people who murdered George Floyd or stood around and watched George Floyd being murdered, then they are not a leftist anymore. It's okay to tell them to fuck off and die.
Yeah, and I mean, like, and we can go back to the first episode, right? Like, the reason these people are calling for 500,000 more cops is that they've given up entirely, right? They literally do not think it is possible for anything to ever improve in the U.S.
And they are
wrong.
Yeah, and I think that they're okay with the way that our police behave, and if that makes them feel comfortable and safe, then they don't mind that
people die
at the hands of the police.
Cops protect rich people. These people have gotten wealthy enough to have the cops now benefit them. It's that simple. Like that's I think that really is the driving motivator here.
Yeah. And I will say this too. Like if we ever get to a point where we start fucking doing this, like take us down too. This isn't just a sort of like we're trying to build our business or whatever. I don't fucking care. I would rather fucking go broke in the streets. I would rather fucking die than be a person whose job it is to say we need more cops. Fuck these people. God.
Fuck them all.
Yep.
They've blocked me on Twitter, so I can't say it, but you all can. Get after them, podcast fans.
Oh God, we are not inciting a harassment campaign. Instead, go do better things.
Don't waste your time doing discourse with people who exist to create bullshit discourse. They're just a distraction. Go and help someone who needs your fucking help. It's cold, it's wet, it's wintertime, and there are unhoused people who are shivering on the street. So don't fuck with the Young Turks. Just ignore them. They're pointless. They're useless.
Go out there and fucking build the socialism that these people think is impossible. Because we can do it, and we will. And then we will fucking laugh at them because we've done it and they are fucking bullshit.
Yeah.
All right. That's the episode.
It Could Happen Here is a production of Cool Zone Media. For more podcasts from Cool Zone Media, visit our website, coolzonemedia.com, or check us out on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to podcasts. You can find sources for It Could Happen Here updated monthly at coolzonemedia.com/sources. Thanks for listening.
There's a lot of pros to drinking Health Aid kombucha. No cons that I can think of. Pro, amazing taste. Pro, pairs well with anything. Pro, probiotic. That's a literal pro. And it's deliciously refreshing. It's the perfect pairing to your meal or great on its own, whether you're having Pink Lady Apple, Berry Lemonade, or one of the other great flavors. It's the perfect swap for soda or alcohol. Make it part of your daily routine. Look for the brown bottle with an anchor on it and try Health Aid Kombucha today.
You don't have to hop a plane to see the world. This month's Free This Week picks on Xfinity brings you around the globe. Experience life at a European resort in the hit comedic drama Seaside Hotel from Walter Presents. Watch romance blossom abroad in a Scottish love scheme from Hallmark Movies Channel. Celebrate Earth Month with planet-saving docuseries like EcoEye with Duncan Stewart on Magellan TV. And be transported to your happy place with iHeartRadio's Feeling Good playlist. Just say Free This Week into your Xfinity voice remote.
Do you dream of a healthier life, but education feels out of reach? Trinity School of Natural Health makes holistic education accessible with online programs to fit your busy schedule. Trinity School of Natural Health makes holistic education accessible with online programs to fit your busy schedule. Trinity School's Certified Natural Health Professional Program is the perfect entry point to gain foundational knowledge to empower yourself, your family, and your community to live healthier lives. Turn your passion into a career. Visit trinityschool.org for more info now.
With dozens of streaming services, box office films, and content to choose from, people are spending over 2.5 years of their lives searching for what to watch. But The Hollywood Reporter brings you THR Charts, one place for you, your family, and friends to find the most watched TV shows and movies every week. THR Charts is a guide to help you spend less time scrolling through platforms so that you can spend more time watching and binging the content everyone is talking about, all supported by data and trusted sources like Nielsen, Comscore, and Paired Analytics. Check out THR Charts on HollywoodReporter.com.